This is VOA News. I'm Michael Brown. House and Senate leaders are naturally reacting along party lines to the announcement of President Trump's impeachment inquiry. Representative John Lewis, the Democratic civil rights icon, endorsed impeachment proceedings in the House after withholding his opinion on the matter for several months.
The future of our democracy is at stake. There come a time when you have to be moved by the spirit of history to take action to protect and preserve the integrity of our nation. I truly believe, the time to begin impeachment proceedings against this president has come. To delay or to do otherwise would betray the foundation of our democracy.
The Republican minority leader of the House said Democrats are still bitter about losing the 2016 presidential election and have wanted to impeach Trump from day one. Britain is bringing home thousands of its citizens after the British travel company Thomas Cook left customers stranded, AP's Ed Donahue reports.
More than 14,000 customers are back in the UK. Another 135,000 are due back over the next 2 weeks. Thomas Cook is out of business. Katie Cowdery is in Cancun, not at the beach, at the airport. The scene is
chaos.
She found out about Cook's demise through the news.
No one knows what's going on. We weren't told. I've done everything.
Tensions are high.
So I haven't got enough milk to feed my babies.
Airport employees are offering little help.
We don't know yet. And that's what the information that we're waiting for.
Britain's business secretary is calling for a fast track of its investigation of the collapse of Thomas Cook. I'm Ed Donahue.
For details on much more news, we invite you to join us at our website. That is voanews.com or the VOA mobile app. From here in Washington, this is VOA News. British Prime Minister Boris Johnson is fighting for his political survival following a ruling from Britain's Supreme Court Tuesday that his decision to suspend Parliament earlier this month was illegal. The ruling means British lawmakers can return to Parliament Wednesday as calls grow for Johnson's resignation. Britain is still due to leave the EU October 31st, although that so-called Brexit process has now been thrown into further doubt. Johnson is due back in London on Wednesday. So are the British lawmakers, who have returned to Parliament, ready to resume their battle with the government. Thousands of Northern California residents were left powerless Tuesday after Pacific Gas and Power turned off their electricity in order to prevent wildfires. VOA's Marissa Melton reports.
The utility cut power to more than 24,000 households, citing dry, windy, and hot conditions. The company said the power will remain off until the threat of wildfires passes. Warnings of high fire danger have been posted for areas north and east of San Francisco. PG&E said it is hopeful power may be restored within 24 to 48 hours. Last year, PG&E power lines sparked a blaze that destroyed nearly 19,000 buildings and killed 85 people. Marissa Melton, VOA News.
The World Health Organization is expressing concern about Tanzanian authorities' reluctance to share detailed information about suspected cases of Ebola and is calling for full transparency. Lisa Schlein reports for VOA from the WHO headquarters in Geneva.
2 weeks ago, the World Health Organization received what it calls unofficial reports regarding the death of a person in the Tanzanian capital Dar es Salaam, suspected of having contracted the deadly Ebola virus. Despite repeated requests, WHO spokeswoman Fadela Shaib tells VOA the WHO did not receive further details of any of the suspected Ebola cases from Tanzanian authorities.
We need information to make a proper risk assessment. If it is Ebola or if it is another disease, we need to know it.
The WHO says it has received no information about possible contact and potential laboratory tests performed on the patients. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
In the case of Tanzania, the WHO says the risk at the regional level is considered high due to potential cross-border travels. However, it says the risk at the global level considered low. Authorities say rescuers still helping people, earthquake victims that is, in northeastern Pakistan, where a 5.8 magnitude quake struck Tuesday, killing at least 19 people, injuring more than 200 others. I'm Michael Brown, VOA News.
morning, Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today is Wednesday, September the 25th. And here are some of the stories we are covering. Zimbabwe police barred a doctor's union president from leaving the country for medical treatment.
We think this is pure barbarism. This is crass madness. And this is a gross violation of Dr. Peter Magombe's right to access healthcare.
A newly elected senator says Liberian legislators make $15,000 a month amid serious economic challenges. Who will carry the day in tomorrow's special by-election in Uganda's Hoima district? And the WHO urges Tanzania to share information about suspected Ebola cases.
We need information to make a proper risk assessment. If it is Ebola or if it is another disease, we need to know it and to share the information with the international community.
We will get new analysis of Sierra Leone's new punishment for rape. Plastic pollution continues in Lake Malawi despite government ban. And a new mobile app helps South Sudanese to transfer money. Those stories and more are coming up on Daybreak Africa. Zimbabwe police on Tuesday defied a high court order to allow Dr. Peter Magombe, president of the Zimbabwe Hospital Doctors Association, to seek urgent medical treatment in South Africa. Magombe was reportedly abducted by state security forces and held in an unknown location for 5 days. As Columbus Mavunga reports from Harare, Magombe's lawyers and colleagues say they fear the 27-year-old outspoken doctors union president was tortured and may have damaged his liver.
If a true police officer just spoke to this one, you understand what you say? No.
Members of Zimbabwe Lawyers for Human Rights arguing with police officers Tuesday night at a private medical facility where Peter Gabriel Magombe, acting president of the Zimbabwe Hospital Doctors Association, is being treated since he emerged after his five-day ordeal. The lawyers are showing the police a high court order issued Tuesday, which barred the Zimbabwe government from blocking the doctor's leader from going to South Africa for an urgent medical treatment. The doctor's father, Kingston Magombe, watched the whole drama unfold and was clearly not amused with the police's behavior.
I want my son to go for further medication.
Fortune Nyamande, the spokesman of the Zimbabwe Association of Doctors for Human Rights, appeals to President Emmerson Mnangagwa's government to honor the High Court order and release Magombe.
We think this is pure barbarism. This is crass madness, and this is a gross violation of Dr. Peter Magombe's right to access healthcare. The laws of the land should be respected. The High Court order should be enforced, and we call upon all progressive Zimbabweans to condemn this in the strongest of terms.
Late Tuesday, the Minister of Information issued a statement saying the Zimbabwe police had filed an urgent application seeking the correction of the order of court interdicting state security officials from preventing the release of Dr. Magombe to proceed to South Africa for medical care. Dewa Mavinga from Human Rights Watch is a qualified Zimbabwean attorney. He responds to that Minister of Information statement.
There is no basis whatsoever for the police to curtail the rights and freedoms of Dr. Magombe, and Dr. Magombe is not a prisoner, is not under arrest. He is a medical patient in urgent need of very, very urgent medical care, which is only available in South Africa.
Now it remains to be seen what the High Court rules Wednesday regarding the fate of Magombe. His colleagues say the outspoken doctor had been abducted for calling a strike on September 3rd to push President Emmerson Mnangagwa's government to raise doctors' salaries equal to less than $200 per month. It was during that abduction era that his doctors say may have been poisoned and now need an urgent medical attention in South Africa, which police denied him Tuesday in a total defiance of a High Court order. Columbus Mavunga for VOA's Daybreak Africa, Harare.
The World Health Organization says it is concerned about Tanzania authorities' reluctance to share detailed information about suspected cases of Ebola. As Lisa Schlein reports from Geneva, the WHO is calling for full transparency.
2 weeks ago, the World Health Organization received what it calls unofficial reports regarding the death of a person in the Tanzanian capital Dar es Salaam, suspected of having contracted the deadly Ebola virus. Since then, the WHO says it was informed by unofficial sources of a 27-year-old man suspected of carrying the virus having been admitted to the hospital. However, it says it has received no information regarding laboratory tests and results either proving or disproving the presence of the deadly virus. During a press conference on September 14th, Tanzanian authorities announced there was no Ebola outbreak in the country. Despite repeated requests, WHO spokeswoman Fadela Shaib tells VOA the WHO did not receive further details of any of the suspected Ebola cases from Tanzanian authorities.
We need information to make a proper risk assessment. If it is Ebola or if it is another disease, we need to know it and to share the information with the international community. We stand ready to provide all the technical support to the Tanzanian authorities to investigate what is, if it's not Ebola, what is it as a disease, and to provide them with technical expertise and help.
The WHO says it has received no information about possible contact and potential laboratory tests performed on the patients. It notes the information is essential to be able to fully assess the potential risk. The WHO counts 3,157 cases of Ebola, including 2,108 deaths in Kivu and Ituri provinces in Eastern Democratic Republic of Congo. A few cases and deaths in Uganda have been reported, but the disease has been contained there and has not spread across borders. In mid-July, the World Health Organization declared the Ebola outbreak in the DRC a public health emergency of international concern. The WHO urged member states of the region to strengthen their readiness and preparedness. It did not recommend a travel ban. In the case of Tanzania, the WHO says the risk at the regional level is considered high due to potential cross-border travel. However, it says the risk at the global level is considered low. Spokeswoman Shaib says the WHO advises against any restrictions on travel or trade to Tanzania in relation to the current situation based on available information. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
Who will carry the day in Thursday's special by-election in Uganda's Hoima district? Will it be the candidate supported by President Yoweri Museveni's ruling National Resistance Movement, or the candidate supported by parliamentarian Robert Chakulai or Bobby Wine's People Power Movement? At stake tomorrow is the woman member of parliament by-election pitting NRM candidate Harriet Businge Buyenya and Forum for Democratic Change candidate Ms. Asinasi Nyaketo, supported by Bobby Wine. There was heavy deployment Tuesday of Uganda People's Defense Forces in the district as both President Museveni and Bobby Wine campaigned there. Joy Sinyonyi is the spokesman for Bobby Wine's People Power Movement.
The president obviously keeps making several remarks nowadays. He says, you know, we have nothing to offer. Well, all the MPs in that area have previously belonged to the ruling party, which he leads. But what have they done for that area? The people are poor. They can't access clean water. That's the oil region, the oil that was discovered in Uganda recently. That's where it was discovered. But the people in that area are extremely poor. There's very many young people in that district that are unemployed. They are jobless. The hospitals in that place are run down. The schools, kids study under trees and all of that. So President Museveni has had nothing to offer to those people. Let him give us a break. The people know better. And we are looking forward to a win.
The president told the voters in Hoima district that the ruling NRM has registered outstanding achievements for which the people in Hoima district should vote for the NRM candidate.
I don't know which achievements he's talking about, because the very people he was addressing in Hoima, it's a bedrock of poverty. There is a high rate of youth unemployment. The hospitals in that area are run down. When you go to the schools, they are makeshift structures. Children are studying under trees. You smell the poverty as you get to many of these places. And by the way, that's not just the story of Hoima alone, but it's the story of many districts across Uganda. So when he says that he has delivered to them, oh yes, he has. He has delivered poverty to them. He has delivered poor service delivery to them. He has, of course, delivered a dictatorship to them that brutalizes them and does not want them to express themselves. That should be the case.
The Honorable Bobi Wine has gone against President Museveni before in local elections. What are the chances that your candidate will win over the ruling party's candidate?
Look, everywhere we go in this country, people are tired, they are yearning for change. And wherever we go, even to the previously stronghold areas of the NRM, the people keep chanting people power. They say they want change. The young, the old, the middle-aged, they are just sick and tired of President Museveni's government, because for coming to 34 years now, it's been a totalitarian dictatorship that has not delivered services and all of that, and people are saying, look, we have had enough. There's been several by-elections that have actually spoken to this, which by-elections we have won overwhelmingly, and we have literally beaten President Museveni, if you like, in Bujiri, in Rukunjiri, in Jinja, then Arua, where Bobi Wine and a couple of others were arrested, tortured, and so on. So the opposition, we have been winning these resoundingly, and we see this as a semi-final. The final is coming in 2021, when we shall eventually trounce President Museveni for the presidency, and of course, you know, parliament and all the other levels of leadership.
Joel Senyonyi is a spokesman for Ugandan parliamentarian Bobi Wine's People Power Movement. You're speaking with us from Germany. Today is Wednesday, September 25th, and you're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Barton in Washington. Daybreak Africa time is coming up at 17 minutes past the hour. Liberian legislators make over $15,000 per month amid serious economic challenges in the country. Newly elected Senator Abraham Darius Dillon disclosed this on Tuesday. He told a news conference in Monrovia that the $15,000 comprises special allowances for gasoline, transportation, reimbursements, among others. As Moses Gazier will report from Monrovia, Senator Dillon said a $15,000 a month salary is too much for a single legislator.
The issue of how much Liberian legislators earn has been a subject of discussion among Liberians, but the revelation by Senator Abraham Darius Dillon is the first confirmation by a legislator about alleged handsome salaries of Liberian legislators. Mr. Dillon, who was elected this past July, said he became aware of the different benefits for lawmakers on Monday.
We are making special allowance, $10,000. Transportation reimbursement allowance is $3,175. Then gasoline is $2,150. When you put these sums together, $15,325 gross.
Mr. Dillon defeated the ruling party candidate in the Masurawa County senatorial by-election in July. He said revealing lawmakers' salary was a fulfillment of his campaign promise.
I believe this amount is too high, and that is why I am taking $5,000 out of this amount and returning the rest of the money to Mosorado County so that the people can determine what they want to do with it in terms of humanitarian and other developmental needs.
The Liberian government, through an advice from the International Monetary Fund, the IMF, has begun implementing salary harmonization exercise in order to reduce government's wage bill. Finance and Development Planning Minister Samuel Twer told legislators that the government had begun reducing salaries of 9,000 civil servants who were overpaid. Minister Twer said 15,000 civil servants will get an increase in their salary, while 55,000 government workers' pay will remain constant. There have been repeated calls for legislators to lower their salaries, but those calls have yielded no result. Senator Dillon said if lawmakers agree to cut their wages, over $1 million will be generated every month, which will go towards the development of the country.
If we get $10,000 back through the government system, 103 of us will generate and save $1.3 million every month. Times 12 months will be over $20+ million. We can put it back in the health sector, or we can put it in the education sector.
Currently, there are 103 members in both houses of the Liberian legislature. In addition to their take-home pay, the legislators receive a vehicle that costs an estimated $40,000. Even Senator Dillon has come under serious criticism for accepting a government vehicle worth an estimated $40,000. Liberia is currently experiencing serious economic challenges. Inflation is high, while the local currency has slumped. It is not clear how other members of the legislature will react to Senator Dillon's revelation. For VOA News, this is Moses Gazio reporting from Monrovia, Liberia.
Sierra Leone has increased the possible punishment for those found guilty of rape, while the Human Rights Commission also succeeded in amending the law to make exceptions to the maximum sentence of life in prison for child rape. Simiti Lavla from Lavle from Sierra Leone's Human Rights Commission spoke to Ricky Stryak about the new law, which she says is a victory for those fighting what President Julius Maada Bio declared earlier a national crisis.
There are also additional clauses that we put. So instead of having a fixed gradation that everybody just automatically gets life imprisonment for rape of a child, it will actually now took into account that some of the sexual acts with children are also children on children, boys on girls. So we could not be having boys going to life imprisonment. So instead, that there was a graduated punishment from them, I think from 5 to 15 years if you're a child, as in under 18 years, and 18 to 25, you have a different penalty. And then it's adult on a child that you could get up to. So it'd be 15 to life. So you still allow the judge some discretion, depending on the circumstances, to give you minimum of 15 or maximum to life imprisonment instead of the automatic life imprisonment.
Are there any concerns that this will deter people from reporting crimes, especially if the alleged perpetrator is a family member?
When it was a mandatory maximum, that was the concern. One, that it would deter people. But two, as they said, the aspect of children. What would you do to a 14-year-old boy? So, but to deal with the aspect of deterring people, there was also a provision of what they call compromise. So if you interfere to stop somebody, a victim, reporting an alleged thing, there's also a penalty for you. You could go up to 1 year in prison or pay a fine of 10 million yen. So they put in imprisonment or fine or both. There's also a penalty for that. Then in terms of the facilities that a victim could have, in the free medical, they specify that you should be able to get it at any government hospital or accredited health unit in your area that could provide sexual health services, that you could also get free treatment there.
It's one thing to have this law in place, but the resources that the law enforcement authorities have in order to pursue these charges, is that addressed in the new law?
So an act cannot necessarily talk about the resources, because that's the direct application, the implementation. So what it is now for lobbying for more Ministry of Finance to provide more resources to the existing structures.
That was Simiti Lavle of Sierra Leone's Human Rights Commission. She was speaking to Ricky Stryak from Freetown. Some residents of South Sudan's capital, Juba, said the recent introduction of a mobile phone app to transfer money has made it much easier to conduct financial transactions. They also say it spares them the burden of carrying a lot of cash around. But as Winnie Cirino reports from Juba, residents say the money transfer companies should expand services to all parts of South Sudan.
23-year-old Patrick Okello, who hails from the former Eastern Equatorial State, says before mobile money transfer services came on the scene, he used to send money through agents who would travel all the way to Torit, a risky venture since there have been several armed robberies and lootings along the Juba-Nimule Road over the past few years. Okello says now he simply uses his phone to transfer money to his brother and finds the app very convenient.
I sent money through Mgurush, and my brother on the other side of Torit managed to get the money quite fast, and it is quite better compared to the system that we used in the past, whereby you could send money and accidents will happen on the road and the money will enter it.
27-year-old Bolis Martin says he registered his mobile phone number on the day the mobile phone money transfer service was available and deposited money into his account the same day. He says he immediately used the app to buy food at Nyakron Market. Martin says he puts money on the mobile money account rather than carrying cash because it is far safer.
You know, in Juba town, we do movies in our pocket. Sometimes those Toronto boys used to capture our money, they capture phone. So I decided to use this service because I don't want my money to be taken.
55-year-old Teresa Siricio says she knows there are some areas where money transfer apps on mobile phones are not in service because of insecurity, but she believes mobile money services would make life easier if it were available to people living in rural areas.
Most of the exchange offices sending money, sometimes it's difficult for them to get to some certain states because they don't have offices there. But I believe with the M-Gurush, in collaboration with Zane, they will do a more effective and efficient job, which is going to help a lot of us, especially the community people who normally don't really have that much access to the banks.
Oyat is adding Zane, which collaborates with both M-Gurush and NailPay companies in mobile money services, to expand their services to South Sudanese areas that have no network. M-Gurush and NailPay launched their mobile money services 2 months ago. Michael Makwey, South Sudan's Minister for Telecommunication, has urged the companies to train more people on how to use the services due to the high illiteracy rate in the country. For VOA News, I am Winnie Serino in Juba.
Plastic bags continue to pollute Lake Malawi despite a government ban on the bags. Conservationists say the plastic is putting a strain on aquatic life in the lake. Studies have warned that the fish stock in the lake could be depleted by 2050 unless the pollution is brought to an end. Lamek Masina reports from the lakeside district of Mangochi.
Like people across Africa, Malawians often use plastic bags for carrying various items because of their durability and lightweight. But conservationists say the bags present a threat to about 1,000 fish species found in the Africa's third largest lake. Fossi Ngwira is the country director for conservation NGO Ripple Africa.
You know, when these plastic papers goes to the lake, you know, you find that fish are eating this plastic paper, which is harmful to fish, which is not good.
Malawi banned the use of thin plastics in 2012, but the ban was suspended after Plastic Manufacturers Association of Malawi obtained a court order negating it, saying the ban posed a danger to their businesses. Although the Supreme Court of Appeal upheld the ban in July this year, communities living along Lake Malawi still complain of plastics flooding the lake. Time Mbewe is the vice chairman for the Village Beach Committee, responsible for taking care of lake resources in the Makawa area. He says these plastic bags are heavily affecting lives of fish in the lake. For example, we had a lot of fish around this area in the past, but now the plastic papers are making the fish fail to breathe properly once covered. In so doing, they don't breathe. Mbewe says residents say they cannot force the plastic bag makers to stop because they don't have the mandate to do so. He says we would wish government empowered us to assist traders who are selling the plastic papers to stop it. This would help us completely clean the lake of any plastic papers. However, a local conservation NGO, Ripple Africa, has introduced an initiative to rid the lake of plastics, in which it mobilizes communities to pick up the bags in and around the lake. Lamek Masina for VOA News, Mangochi, Malawi.
And that's it for this Wednesday, September 25th edition of Daybreak Africa. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa crew, producer Nicole Beckford, reporters Peter Clotty and Ricky Stryak, as well as sports editor Samson O'Malley, along with our engineer Carl Sterling, I'm James Barton, Washington, wishing you in Africa a very, very good day.
Hello, this is Shaka Sali, host of Straight Talk Africa.
On the next Straight Talk Africa, world leaders gather in New York for the United Nations General Assembly, plus growing Africa's agriculture. On the next Straight Talk Africa.
Tune in Wednesdays at 18:30 UTC right here on VOA Africa.
News happens around the clock.
And VOA brings you the latest at the top of each hour.
This is Joe Palca.
I'm Victor Beatty.
Francis Alonso.
Tune in for a summary of the news at the top of each hour, around the clock on the Voice of America. Hourly newscasts on the radio and on the internet at voanews.com. VOA, a leader in news coverage for over 70 years.